Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition Smart Bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
Para aquellos de ustedes que continúan,
nous espérons que vous avez passé un bon moment sur notre vol et espérons vous revoir.
For those of you continuing on, we wish you a safe and pleasant journey. If this is your final destination, we welcome you home.
After being isolated in our homes for long periods of time, it's easy to feel less at home than ever. This is the podcast where I, Sandra Andres, and Laura Bach invite fellow artists, norm breakers, researchers, scientists, and spiritual leaders to share vulnerable stories and profound insights about how we all can feel more at home with ourselves.
Together with our guests, we will examine how to break the behavioral patterns that make us feel stuck and explore how to live a more joyful, connected, and sustainable life from the inside and out.
Because we do know one thing, maybe now more than ever. Regardless of our gender identity, profession, or nationality, we are more alike than we are different. And often it is a crisis or a challenge that cracks our hearts wide open and brings us closer to ourselves.
We are so excited to have you here with us. Welcome to Coming Home. Hello, hello, everyone. Hi, Sandra.
Hello, Laura. Hello out there.
Welcome to this season one final of Coming Home, our labor of love, our joint venture, our wish to provide you all with a feeling of belonging and a hope of bringing you inspiration, knowledge, and intriguing stories that move, touch, and surprise you.
The topic of this episode is something that has been one of our recurring and biggest takeaways from doing this first season of Coming Home: self-compassion. To practice it is also what we have tried to remind you and ourselves of at the end of each episode, just by simply saying, be kind to yourselves until next time. Personally, I have been pretty good at self-care throughout my life, but I have been pretty darn lost when it comes to self-compassion. What does it mean? And what is it exactly? How do we get more of that in our lives? And why is it so damn difficult to give this to ourselves sometimes when we can extend it to others?
So normally before doing an episode, we spend quite a lot of time prepping the dramatized stories that we then share in the episode. We both work on them and sometimes we know them by heart once we get to the recording of the episode. But this time is somewhat different because we have both recorded a story for one another to hear, but we have no idea what the other one is bringing to the table today. Only that the stories are somehow circling around self-compassion.
Yeah, this will be fun. Yeah. I'm excited to see what comes up.
Me too, me too.
And then we also have the lovely guest of expertise, Agnes Branny, who will join us for the second half of this episode. Agnes has redefined the way we think about self-care, from maintaining our physical and mental health to improving our well-being.
I so look forward to speaking to her. But first, should we just jump straight into my story?
Yes, please, let's do it.
I'm sitting in my living room that also serves as my bedroom. Normally, you wouldn't know by this time of day. The bed would have been made into a couch, the pillows and duvet tucked away, and the room freshly aired out. But for what seems to be many months now, I've lost track, when the room serves as what has become one big mess. I'm still in bed, looking around, trying to avoid eye contact with the clock that deceivingly displays how late in the day it is.
The dinner plates from yesterday's supper are still on the table. I hate it. I know I should go for a walk. I should call someone. I should take a shower. I should... Oh, fuck. Here the tears come rolling again. I'm so tired of them. They have developed this life of their own. They just come and go as they please. I lay back. I look at the ceiling while I let the tears do their thing. My mind is filling me up with the same questions over and over again. When will this pain leave? When will I be my normal self again? And the big question, when will I start liking myself again? This last year has been one long demolition of my life as I knew it, of me as I knew me. Event after event, deep crisis after deep crisis, until I could no longer get up. I've lost everything. All my money, all my jobs that were lined up, some of my friends, and my partner with whom I had set my whole life up with. I've had several nervous breakdowns. I've been in and out of hospitals with overexerted heart and unexplainable numbness of my left side. What a fucking success I turned out to be, eh? I catch a glimpse of my vague reflection in the window and I almost shout, "Hey, miserable! I simply don't like you anymore. I want a divorce." Instantly, when the words leave my mouth to bounce the walls and return through my ears into my heart, I feel it. How deeply those words hurt me. I would never, ever speak to anyone else like that, especially not in their darkest hour. I've tried everything to get better and get my old self back. Everything. But then it dawns on me. Not at any point have I accepted myself as I am right now. Right this very moment, full of snot and tears and confusion and immense chaos inside, utterly incapable of what I would normally be capable of. And that's where I make a decision. This shit show of events will not now nor ever get me to divorce myself. I look back at the reflection in the window, and instead of seeing a pathetic and strange woman, I see me. Me, who is trying. Me, that for some reason has got it into her head that she's only worth loving if she's smiling and happy and taking care of everyone. I see me that's tired of fighting, of never feeling enough. And I smile at me. "Hey, we'll figure this out," I say. "Just rest now. You need it. And then later we will do the dishes together and then call someone to go for a walk with them. And then, you're all right, Laura. And I love you." Okay, that last one is a stretch right now, but it's a promise as well. To say, "I love you," to myself every day until the bottomest parts of me believe it.
Wow.
Yeah.
That really moved me, Laura.
Did it? Why?
Because it's just so relatable.
Yeah.
You know?
That's the thing about sharing these stories, that each time I feel this like a hint of embarrassment and... Because it's so unsmart, man. It's just like, fucking hell, that's not the... version of you that you want people to look at. That's normally what we hide from one another. And then here, what we're trying to do is just being honest and vulnerable. And I truly think that we just feel less alone if we do that.
What hits me is just, you know, when I listen to your story, is just how hard we are on ourselves. Like, obviously, yeah. How hard you are on yourself.
Yeah.
But that's what I mean is the relatable part it's so easy to hit on yourself, like to really beat yourself up over and over again. And you would never do that to someone else, like you said,
exactly,
in the story.
Exactly. And that's the thing, you know, that saying of what doesn't kill you make you stronger. For me, it's sort of, I don't know, it gave an expectation, I think, of I had to become strong from this. I had to be like a different, stronger version then. And that was just not possible. That wasn't it. The it was what doesn't kill you. Yeah, maybe I don't even know. Mm-hmm. I don't actually even know. How uncool is that?
What doesn't kill you can make lots of things happen in you.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Like, yeah,
it could have all kinds of outcomes. Stronger might not be it every time.
And that's okay. And that's where the self-compassion comes in. If that isn't okay, what that does to you, on top of an event, on top of a crisis, you have your self-loathing. And that's the bit that you can actually do something about. You might not be able to do something about the crisis or the event in your life, but you are able to do something about self-loathing and try to turn it around 500 times a day sometimes, just not participating in putting yourself down.
Mm.
And
yeah.
Putting in other words, like you're doing okay, like you are all right. What moved me from the story I just heard now was those words, like, I get emotional now.
Yeah.
You're all right, Laura. You're all right, you know?
Mm.
And I think that's, then just put that sentence in each time you say to yourself, that's not good enough.
And I think that's exactly what you bring up, is what so many of our experts have brought up on this show. Jenny Richardson from the previous episode, and Dr. Katarina Gospich, that what is it that you can control? Put focus on what you can do something about.
Yeah.
It is such an important thing to remember, and we so easily forget it.
We do, and it's hard. It's not an aha moment and then everything is solved. It's like I said, I don't honestly feel I love you all the time, but I can say it to myself again and again and again. Like, it is what we talk about a lot as well. Like, it is a practice, right? And we can share this with each other, and we can say, okay, it is hard, but just because it is hard doesn't mean that it's impossible. And it will make you feel better eventually. It will make you have a better relationship to yourself. And that is the one that's the closest one to you, after all.
Yeah, I mean, it's like we take ourselves out of the equation all the time, but it's the only thing that you can't take out of the equation, because it will catch up with you. Like, you will, you know, you will catch up with yourself at one point or another. And like, it sounds to me, what you had to go through is pretty extreme at the point in the story and what happened. But as human beings, we probably have more than one crisis during a lifetime.
Oh, for sure.
And often it comes at a time when lots of things catch up on us as well, or whether we want to or not.
Yeah.
Something happens, and then we have to face a lot of things about ourselves.
Yeah.
So, and that's where it's really, really challenging to do it.
Yeah.
So I think practicing it when you're not feeling bad is very important, because I think I hear a lot of people making fun of, like, self-compassion and self-care. You know, like, there's a lot of talk about that these days.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that we need to realize the structure that we all are a part of.
Yes.
It's the patriarchal society.
Yeah.
You know, no matter where you live in the world, I mean, maybe there are a few small little islands somewhere that are different, you know, but patriarchy rules.
Yeah.
And here's where, like, here's where I really would like to bring up a quote that clarifies it for me about patriarchy.
Mm-hmm.
It's a quote that I saw just a few days ago by Canadian author Justine Musk. And it goes like this. I think it explains it beautifully. "The enemy of feminism isn't men. It's patriarchy. And patriarchy isn't men. It's a system. And women can support the system of patriarchy just as men can support the fight for gender equality."
Amen.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
And what we need to remember, I think, and what I try to remember all the time, is that patriarchy doesn't value typically female traits such as caretaking, nurturing, or vulnerability.
Yeah.
It values efficiency, results, hierarchy, and power over something or someone.
Mm-hmm.
So being hard on yourself for not being efficient enough or inadequate comes easily to you in a patriarchal society.
Yeah.
You know, it's kind of what it thrives on.
Yeah. And it's passed down from generation to generation, right?
Yeah.
That's what I've seen. I've seen that.
And that's where actually I would like to jump in with my story.
Yes, please do.
Because all of these things we feel that we need to do, you know, and that this culture and the society conditions us to think a certain way. We're not even aware of it.
Yes.
So here we go. Here is my story.
I need that flute. I hear myself burst out angrily. It's a summer day in Stockholm. I remember sitting in the car with my husband, and we are arguing intensely. This is some years back, before having our daughter, and truthfully for me, before being fully aware of my privileged perspective. My husband and I are two freelancers who kind of work all the time, because in the businesses we are in, you are only as good as your last job, and you need to constantly be on the lookout for the next one to make sure the bills are covered. Luckily, we both love what we do, but today is the very first day of our planned out and much needed vacation where we will try to not work at all. Very shortly, we are supposed to be picked up with a boat at a certain place outside of town that will take us to one of the more remote islands in the archipelago of Stockholm. It is the perfect place to wind down, out in nature, surrounded by water, and with a shaky internet, which makes it easier to unplug. So, for the past few days, I have been running around like mad, trying to wrap up loose ends and the projects I'm working on at the moment. Several of them will continue when I come back, but I wanted to feel like I'm coming back to a clean slate. And I want everything to be in order in our apartment. It should also feel like a clean slate when we come back after vacation. And I want to make sure I have a suitcase packed to perfection. By that I mean with only clothes I feel and look great in. Check. Several books in different categories that I have rushed to get last minute at different bookstores and will read. Check. Some plays and scripts that I have been wanting to get to for work are in there too. Check. And oh yeah, my receipts that I won't have time to sort through now, but will sort through during my two first days of vacation and send off so I can feel lighter and, well, like a clean slate in a relaxed state. Check. Last but not least, I need to use this time to learn something new. I have been wanting to take up playing an instrument for some time now, and accidentally, while packing, I realized that my vacation is the perfect time. I will pick up the flute again. I used to play it. That will by far be the easiest to pick up, and a great way for me to refresh my note reading. So, in the middle of packing, I jumped online and found someone who is selling a flute in Stockholm, right here, right now. Of course, I jumped at the opportunity and quickly made an appointment to squeeze in buying it and picking it up, just as we are leaving town. Considering that we are late due to everything else I wanted to have in place, my husband is not crazy about this idea. But I'm determined. I refuse to let this one go. Having that flute will make me feel better and set for vacation. It will basically solve my whole life. Check. My husband and I argue all the way in the car until the second I jump out and run in to buy the essential flute off some lovely person in their apartment whose sentences I keep cutting off to just make a quick purchase and jump back into the car again. Having run up and down the stairs, I'm panting heavily as I sit down in the car and close the door. The fucking flute, as my husband has called it, is finally on my lap.
There. That was quick, right? We're all good. This feels great. Reset. Thank you. Thank you, my love. Let's go. Go, 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 go.
Yeah.
Ah, there's that efficiency again.
I mean, I'm laughing because I just want to say, cut to the end of summer, right? I haven't opened even the case of the flute.
I was about to ask you that. Did you play the flutes?
I mean, didn't. Not even once.
No, it's weird, isn't it?
And this accumulates, you know, in me that I feel bad when I look at that flute. You know, when
Of course, that's an extra thing.
Yeah, not anymore. I mean, I have come further now, but it's quite crazy all the demands I put on myself, and it makes me sound completely crazy. I'm not like this is a little bit
because that's relatable as well.
Yeah, but right. But I feel like this is definitely what I've been doing. It's just been my autopilot, a part of it.
Yeah.
And it's also what I was talking about before in the fifth episode with Dr. Katarina Gospich, where I was talking about that I discovered that I didn't have any value unless I did something in that therapy session. Yeah.
Yeah.
So it's the doing that gives me the reason to be here. It's just so wrong in so many ways. But here the autopilot sneaks in and that's where it's coming from.
Yeah. And even as you said, you go on holiday and the whole idea is to be at peace with yourself and your surroundings and your family. And it's like that thing of you set yourself a goal, like meditate, for example, and then you sit down and then you just need that to be efficient as well. And you discover that I'm not at all actually doing what I need to, which is creating peace inside, because I just like I want to get efficiently to that peace. 10 minutes, great, meditation, moving on, yoga, let's go, and then work, and then kids, and then... And the same thing, like my vacation needs to be efficient somehow. Okay, I'll bring a flute. Then at least I, you know, and that it's just if we don't catch ourselves doing this and if we don't also maybe laugh at ourselves sometimes and like, oh God, I'm doing it again. Let's not do that. Let's just give ourselves the time to stare into a tree for 2 weeks. And that's where we actually, interestingly enough, sometime get much more efficient.
Yeah.
Right.
See what comes up from out of that, you know, just spending time with yourself and what's in the moment.
Just getting like gas in your tank. Why is it that we think we can just keep on running without consequences?
Yeah.
Of course we can't. We're not built like that.
You sent me something on social media where there was an image of an almost dying phone that hadn't been charged enough. And it's like you wouldn't ignore charging your phone when it looks like this or something was, and you're like, but you would with yourself, wouldn't you?
And why is that? Why is that?
Yeah.
And I think we all have a tendency, some with others, to do that, to ignore.
Absolutely, because we're different. But I think in different ways, we have a way of working with this efficiency society that we live in, the patriarchal system that we live in. We all have are different ways of dealing with that. And these are a couple of expressions. But I think it's going to be so fun to ask Agnes now, because I also think that we need to clarify these concepts, like what's self-compassion and what's self-care and how do they connect and how are they different?
Yes. And then the counterbalance, because efficiency is great, but that's the counterbalance. It is self-compassion and it is self-care. So let's jump in to the interview with her and hear what she has to say.
Graduating with a master's degree in psychology and qualifying in person-centered counseling, Agnes Branny offers transformational coaching and is a content creator at 29K, a free mental health app. She is known for creating enabling digital interventions, running well-being projects, and coaching people from all walks of life. On her path, she has graduated with 2 psychology degrees, trained in counseling and transformational coaching, and spent the past 15 years creating enabling interventions and projects in Scotland, Sweden, and beyond. Away from the screen, Agnes can be found in nature, hiking and playing with her family, at the kitchen table, on a yoga mat, journaling and connecting with others, like she will be doing here today.
Hi, Agnes, and welcome.
Hello, ladies. Great to be here.
Oh, it's great to have you here.
We are so delighted to have you join us because you have many years of experience working with people regarding self-compassion. And we have so much that we would like to talk to you about. But first, we are intrigued to hear you clarify the difference between self-care versus self-compassion. Would you mind doing that for us?
Yeah, sure. So I think for anyone listening, I think a really good starting point would be to just clarify what self-compassion is in the first place. So most people are familiar with being compassionate towards the other. So what that means is like having that kind of regard, that kind of feeling of noticing that someone is suffering and being kind and loving to that person. And also understanding that that is a part of the human experience. We cannot change that in itself. So that is compassion. So self-compassion, you just imagine that that kind of beam of compassion is now turned toward ourselves. To me, self-care is like my kind of favorite subject of all time to talk about. It's a kind of practical day-to-day way we can practice being compassionate towards ourselves, not just our physical health and mental health, but also to our relationships and so on and so forth. That is the difference. The compassion is more like the attitude towards ourselves, the way we carry ourselves or others, and self-care is the action, the practice of being compassionate towards ourselves.
That makes sense.
They go hand in hand, you could say.
They do. And I think it's really important that, to understand that when we first hear that word self-compassion, a lot of people get possibly quite scared of irritated, maybe smothering ourselves, but really
yes.
It's just another level of, if you're familiar with sympathy, noticing that, you know, something is happening and maybe kind of projecting our own beliefs onto others, then there's empathy and then there's compassion. So for me, it's like layers of evolution that we can learn to be really loving and kind. It's really important to kind of draw that distinction. And then self-care is that kind of daily practice of showing up for oneself.
Mm. What we call the daily practice of coming home.
Yes.
On this podcast.
This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
We were just sharing stories with each other, Sandra and I, on self-compassion, like a story from our life, where that might have been lacking. And one question is, self-compassion is one thing, but sometimes when we need it the most, it's the hardest, mm-hmm. right? It's that feeling of being caught in a place in your life that you're not comfortable with, where you don't feel mm-hmm. smart or in any way presentable to the world. And then it's hard to have that self-compassion. Can you maybe help us here? What do you do when you're in that situation?
Yeah, great. So before I go on to talking about what do, I just really wanted to pause there and acknowledge that self-compassion is incredibly hard. Mm. And for most people, we're simply not raised to be compassionate. If we are compassionate, we can be quite good at being compassionate towards others. Now, being self-compassionate, that's a whole other
Oh, for sure.
It's really, really difficult. So just understanding and accepting that it does not often come naturally in some sense is important. Mm. So back to your question about how can we be compassionate? So self-compassion, if you think of it, it has three elements. So there's an element of noticing that I'm suffering. There is an element of being sort of like kind and understanding, having the kind of loving, you can think of sort of like mothery way towards myself, both female or male. And the third part is to understand that suffering is a part of the human experience. And that is where most people get themselves tripped up, because while they may have that kind of understanding, okay, I'm going through something, and indeed manage to switch on those kind of kind and loving ways towards oneself, this notion of this as a part of the human experience is really hard. And I can, if it's okay, I can share a very recent experience that I've had.
Yes, please.
Okay, so I'm going through a period of uncertainty. It's lasting about 3 months, which has to do with how work is and how work will be in the future. So anyway, I'm in this period of uncertainty. And so many times I found myself noticing, okay, it's tough right now. It's up the hill. It's hard not knowing what will be after the summer. But immediately my mind gravitates towards trying to solve this, trying for it to be different, as if this was a problem or an obstacle to be overcome. And at one point, I actually talked to someone who meditates a lot about this, because I found that all of the psychology tricks and tools that I've had, none of this has worked for me, not even coaching, like none of this was helping. And then what he had to say on this is that uncertainty in itself is not something to overcome. It is not a problem. And then I paused on this and I thought, you know, it isn't a problem. It just is that state between something that I know and something that I yet don't know. And how can I hold space? So that is an element of kind of shared human experience, that people going through that experience with certainty will undoubtedly feel that they don't know what's on the other side. And instead of trying to problem solve through this, it's just this acceptance of right now, it's tough. It's tough to be in this in between. So that is one example. And that is probably the hardest bit, allowing for that to last, you know, longer than an hour, longer than a day, sometimes months, maybe even longer. That is really a tricky one to do, because we are not wired for being comfortable with the uncomfortable. As soon as we experience discomfort, we want to do something about it, right? So it's almost like we have to sort of embrace that discomfort.
Yes, that's exactly what I was touching upon on my story, that I tried everything to pull myself out of months of dark hours of my life. And then realizing the only thing I hadn't done was actually accepting this is me right now. And then trying to both self-care, self-compassion, everything I could think of to just bring that in the moment of complete, basically, despair.
Yeah.
Exactly. I'm so glad you bring this up, Agnes, because it is what we forget all the time, that the ingredient of uncertainty and impermanence, they're really the two ingredients of life that we can't get around.
Yeah.
They're always there, no matter what our lives look like, right?
Exactly.
Yeah. So what is a good way to practice self-compassion?
Yeah, there are many ways to practice self-compassion. So far, I've spoken about this kind of pillars of self-compassion. So let's begin by just noticing and admitting, you can think of it like the elephant in the room. Let's admit that we as individuals are in that moment going through something. It could be a breakup, it could be uncertainty, it could be sore back, it could be anything. Just to pause and sort of admit to oneself that something is happening in me, and then to kind of make space for that, that already will be a huge game changer, because the minute we name the emotion or we name what we go through, the intensity of that will already begin to decrease. Now, not go away again, but it will start to decrease. And then from that place onwards, there's a number of different things we can do. So to activate self-compassion, we can think back to that nurturing instinct that we all have in ourselves. And if you think that you don't have, I'll maybe bring up a story that always reminds me of that. So Dr. Christine Neff is sort of the godmother of self-compassion research. And she's incredible, and I would encourage everyone to look into her research. But she talks about this idea of us, well, it's not an idea, it's the reality of we are, at the end of the day, mammals, right? So we are primed for kind, soft ways of being spoken to, or, you know, for soft touch, for gentleness, because we, as all mammals, grow up receiving that, ideally speaking. So if we can kind of think of like activating those gentle ways in which we can handle ourselves, and it could be slowing down for a cup of tea, taking three slow breaths, it could be just slowing down, and could be, you know, putting the phone away. It could be simple ways with that mindset of slowing ourselves down and receiving that nurturing energy and kind of absorbing that inwards. There are also other ways we can practice self-compassion. So for most people, when they find themselves hitting that setback or hard spot, the inner critic will come on, and it can be quite loud kind of voice. And so if you think of, if there is an inner critic in you, then there's also the inner friend. So if you can, instead of trying to kind of shut off the inner critic, see it as an opportunity to invite that inner friend and give them a bit more space, you know, maybe to start with will just be like a little message, and still the inner critic will dominate the space. But still, just think of opening up to that inner friend that you have. So it's almost like the opposite of the inner critic. Another way is to work on our intentions. So for example, setting positive intentions for ourselves. So where most people try to optimize their day and, you know, squeeze as much as they can and even more.
Guilty as charged.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, what kind of intentions do we set for ourselves each day? That can be an incredibly beautiful example of practicing self-compassion, because if I don't make space in my day to be kind and caring and nurturing, and it can be simple things like, you know, having a lunch break away from the screen, giving myself 15 minutes longer sleep, those kinds of examples, then, you know, I'm not utilizing these daily opportunities for being compassionate.
And I like that you say intentions. Can I just add that? Because I think that's a greater word than like tasks or I have to. Like intention, my intention is, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. So it can be, as you say, it doesn't necessarily have to be like a big thing, a retreat, you know, an hour of your journal. Just even just noticing how I handle myself, how I speak to myself, how I tend to really gravitate toward that inner critic, for example, is a huge game changer for opening up to self-compassion.
Yeah, many small changes lead to bigger changes, I presume. Precisely. And we also talked about that early on. I mentioned the whole, what doesn't kill you, make you stronger.
Yeah.
And I was like, what doesn't kill you, make you, I don't know. And that's, when you're talking, I'm thinking that it might also just be the case of redefining strength, right? What is stronger? Is that, I'm just capable of doing anything and everything. And I'm just efficient and I can do this and I can do that. And maybe just redefining what strength is. Strength is very much what you're just talking about now, I'm thinking.
Yeah. And when I listen to you, I'm kind of, I want to question, why do we feel like we need to be strong? Why do we feel like we need to endure? Like, where does that come from? Because, you know, let's be honest, we had to kind of pick that message up along the way somewhere. And definitely there's this idea, I think, living in the 21st century, that we need to be more productive, we need to be smarter, we need to be more optimized, all of those things. But, you know, in essence, we are human beings, and the human experience goes up and down all of the time. So for us to think ourselves out of that human experience is counterproductive. So self-compassion can be just a way of coming back to ourselves essentially as human beings, and then allowing ourselves to have a day when we don't feel strong, maybe when we don't want to do the things that we would normally do. And so it doesn't have to be about like, how can I find the inner strength to necessarily overcome this thing that I have right in front of me, but also to be okay with maybe not having a good day, not having a good week, not being productive, failing at something.
Yeah.
And that is that third and the hardest pillar of self-compassion, to kind of understand that we all fail. Human beings fail, not all of the time, but some of the time, undoubtedly, we will fail. And can we be more open and comfortable with that.
Yeah, I mean, just listening to you, Agnes, makes me think of like my daughter who's 7 years old. She, you know, when she says, I'm so bored, you know, I always tell her, well, you know, it's good to be bored sometimes because otherwise you don't know when you're having fun. But I think that there's just something here, like the way we help our kids out with that, but we're not doing that to ourselves the older we get, because that's just a fact, right? How would we know, and how would we appreciate when things are going well and there is a flow in our lives? That it's not possible for that to be constant.
No. Life is meant to be, you know, up and down and diverse and holistic, and, you know, sometimes like this and other times like that. It is not something that we can design a computer software for and just run and optimize and squeeze out of it. And that's just very counterintuitive almost, right? So kind of coming back essentially to ourselves and just accepting that. I have a good friend who talks a lot about females, our menstrual cycles, and she likes to think of them as seasons. So within each month, like having four seasons. And for me, it's really a beautiful framing, because if I accept that within 1 month, I'm both excited and then a bit down and a bit extroverted and introverted and then all those things, then I can build so much more space for myself than when I think I should be exactly equal every single day of the week. And this is just one example, but this can be adapted for anybody at any stage of life, just the awareness that we are not the same. Can I be okay with that?
Yes.
Can I allow myself that, you know, lazy day or excited day without judging that it comes and it's here?
I really like that.
I love that.
Cycle of being, I presume.
Yeah. To realize that we are cyclic beings.
Yes.
Is so important.
All right, people. It's time to do a shout out to our favorite sweet of all time, Tweak Sweets. A total bonus to leading a holistic lifestyle, let me tell you.
There are so many natural flavors to choose from, and they are all good.
And they are so much better for you than your normal sugary candy, because it got 95% less sugar, babies.
How about that?
Go to tweaksweets.com and have a look and see all their deliciousness.
The WHO, World Health Organization, has stated that depression is the leading cause of ill health and disability worldwide. And I've been thinking about how it's different from generation to generation, what we've been growing up with. The fact is that we've all grown up in a patriarchal society. So it's like ignoring your emotions, ignoring the signals. And then with the younger generation, there's much more an understanding of putting words on your emotions and being more aware of mental health in general, and saying, this is not good for me. I hear younger people say that more often, but yet depression is just increasing. And it feels like that makes me just think, when we're talking here, that in this society where you come back to that, we are trying to optimize everything, that's where we kind of falter. That it's, even though we are more aware, we're still trying to do that it the old way, so to speak. And it makes us miserable. So self-compassion has never been more important, is what I'm thinking, and self-care than now.
It's been hugely important. And it's quite interesting that it feels like we are making less space for it than we have done in the past. Because, you know, one part of self-care is, for example, having those rich, meaningful connections and relationships with others. Now, for many people, that will actually feel like that has shrunk in size, right? In their lifetime. So, you know, as it's almost like it feels like we need it more, but we are heading the opposite direction. So why is that? And how come that depression rates are getting bigger and bigger? So one interesting link that I have heard Christine Neff, again, the kind of godmother of self-compassion, talk about is that we, instead of placing emphasis on self-compassion, we place emphasis on self-esteem. Mm-hmm. And this self-esteem as a concept is something that psychologists for many years regarded as the ultimate marker of well-being. Now, that is no longer the case, but has been for many years. And so the way we interpret self-esteem is being above average and special. Now, that is not how psychologists define it, but that's how most people understand self-esteem. So if I feel special in myself and I'm really great at something, then that is how many people will draw their kind of sense of self-esteem. And what research has shown that when we emphasize that, we actually slowly but surely follow a path to depression, because it's simply not possible.
Yeah.
So when that is where we highlight, and that is where our energy goes, then undoubtedly we will be disappointed, because we'll measure ourselves up against others at all times and feel that we're faulty, we're not doing enough. Placing our emphasis on the self-compassion allows us to have this rich human experience, but without judging our, you know, the times that we're not performing or we failed, and just understanding that we all fail.
Wow, Agnes, that is not only very useful, but it's very, very profound. Thank you so much for coming in.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you, Agnes.
And good luck in this project and other projects going ahead. Thank you, ladies.
That is why I love doing this podcast. We set out to do an episode on self-compassion, asking questions like, what does it actually mean to be self-compassionate? And why is it so difficult to give to ourselves when we can extend it to others? And then realizing how complex this subject really is. It's not just a plug and play. This is the core of life. It's how we are conditioned biologically and via our environment to fit in, right? And we have set this life up for ourselves where we feel like we need to run so inhumanely fast and be so efficient and enduring in order to be accepted. And it's simply not possible to live up to those standards. And you know what? I see now that I myself have definitely been caught in a misconstrued perception that once I can tick all the efficiency boxes, then I can get to the self-care and self-compassion. No wonder it's hard that way. You'll never get to the self-care part at all. I mean, come on.
No, I know. What a classic that is.
Truly.
But I mean, until recently, that has been my MO too. I just realized that I've constantly been compromising self-compassion even while practicing what is considered as self-care, like exercising, doing yoga, eating well. You know, it has often been connected to the pressure of ticking all those boxes, being efficient, etc.
Exactly.
Like I already mentioned and shared in our fifth episode and in the beginning of this episode, I discovered in therapy that a deeply buried belief I had was that I had to do things to be deserving of love, even my own love. And today, you know, I think our wildly different stories show how many expressions the lack of self-compassion can have. It seems to stick with us in all layers of life. And if we're not aware of this, it can really control our lives in quite an extensive way.
It really can. And it really does.
Yeah.
I think. Yeah.
Yes. And what was also really interesting to me today was how the perception of self-esteem has really done a number on us, right?
Future us.
Yeah, it was mind-blowing how research shows that we need to feel special and be really great at something to gain self-esteem. But that it slowly but surely can lead to a path of depression because it's simply not possible. We will undoubtedly be disappointed. Because we'll measure ourselves up against others at all times and feel that we are at fault. We are not enough.
That one was really an eye-opener for me. It really was, because I think so many people can relate. I definitely can.
Yeah, uncomfortable touche on that one.
And it feels so important to understand these things. Because we might actually be putting more pressure on ourselves by certain measures instead of taking pressure away if we're not aware, right?
And this is the big thing as well. We are simply not comfortable with the uncomfortable.
Yeah.
As soon as we experience discomfort, we want to do something about it. That's a big one.
But we need to remember, first of all, that we are human beings. And the human experience in nature itself is moving in cycles, like Agnes said. I think that is a very profound understanding and knowing to carry with oneself at all times.
Oh, and I loved how you said this, Sandra. Uncertainty and impermanence really are the two ingredients of life that we can't get around. That is just so true.
Yep, can't get around those. And as Agnes said to that, to think ourselves out of that human experience is so incredibly counterproductive. But even the smallest steps of self-care and self-compassion can be a way of coming back to ourselves, of coming home.
Oh, yeah. And that one part of self-care is having those rich, meaningful connections and relationship with others, which is the foundation of this, our podcast, Coming Home, sharing stories and making connections within yourself and with others.
It is indeed. And what an adventure it has been so far, building Coming Home together with you, Laura, and all of you listening. During this first season, the impact of practicing self-compassion and self-care has continued to be the biggest lesson for me. And I know for you as well, Laura.
Yeah, it really has.
I mean, doing this, we have experienced how easy it is to overextend and compromise your own well-being for the sake of the task at hand. Even if you're doing a podcast about sustainability from the inside and out.
Oh, if only people knew.
Yes. And you know, you can't get around that it's about coming home each and every day to be able to extend that authentically and compassionately in all directions. It doesn't have to be big or sitting down for long meditations. But it's about checking in with yourself daily. Listening in lovingly is what will sustain you. So here's an idea. Maybe this is the summer for us all to really think about what stories we tell ourselves. Are they loving? Are they kind? Or is it maybe time to change some narratives and start living from a place of more self-compassion? Because that, together with practicing self-care, allow us to have a rich human experience throughout life without judging ourselves all the time.
And just you saying that makes me feel like I can breathe more. It just feels like the pressure lifts a little bit. Oh, my word. Okay. Let's take our inner friend by the hand this summer and ask our inner critic to just F off for a while, right? Okay.
Yeah.
So, ladies and gents, we are now getting to the part that I've been looking forward to for quite some time. So, many of you probably know already that Sandra is an amazing musician and singer, and together with the producer of our great theme music for this podcast, Caroline Ljungström. Am I saying that correctly, Sandra?
Ljungström, yes, the Swedish name.
She has created a piece of music magic, the Coming Home song. And I can tell you guys, when I heard this the first time, tears were rolling down my face because it's just one of these songs you put on when your inner critic gets too loud, or when you feel like you want to dance, or when life just needs that certain something that will lift and inspire you.
Wow. Thank you for those kind words.
I mean, every single one of them.
Laura, that's exactly the effect that I'm hoping this song will have when you hear it, you know? It hasn't been released yet. I need to say that because it won't be released until later this year. But of course, here is where I wanted to be heard for the very first time with all of you. This song was written as a reminder, something to listen, sing, and dance to when my head is spinning, to help me snap out of it, so to speak, and come home. There was this sentence, I have to say, that came to me so strongly some time ago, and it was, "No one's going to own my mind. Seeing what the heart will find, it feels like coming home."
Oh, God.
And the longing behind those words has been leading the way the whole time when writing the song together with Caroline Ljungström and Henrik Johnson. Both of them have been writing this with me. and they're insanely talented songwriters and producers who I adore. And I really, really hope the song resonates with you all, that it brings you joy and a sense of belonging, because you do belong here and you are not alone. Here's Coming Home.
Lawmaker, handshaker, what you wanna be when you grow up? Liberator, soul shaker, what they're gonna say when you show up? Deep diver, beat haver, will I ever know which side is up? I call myself, still constant conversation can't hang up. Don't be in your head today, let your heart get in the way. It feels like, feels like coming home. Don't be in your head today, let your heart get in the way. It feels like, feels like coming home. Icebreaker, wreath maker, how am I supposed to wisen up? Taylor, all the second guessing gotta stop. No one's gonna own my mind, seeing what the heart will find feels like coming home. Don't be in your head today, let your heart get in the way. It feels like, feels like coming home. Don't be in your head today, let your heart get in the way. To say feels like coming home, feels like coming home. Don't be in your head today, let your heart get in the way. It feels like coming home. Don't be in your head today, let your heart get in the way. It feels like coming home. Feels like, feels like, feels like coming home. Feels like.
Oh, Sandra. I'm like one big smile. it's just everything that we're trying to do here. This is what we work so hard for. This is it, you know? Let your heart get in the way. Just all the time, really.
Yeah.
And that's
back to that.
And even though it's vulnerable and it's hard, and it's worth it. Every single step of the way, it's worth it. And we need goosebumps. To keep reminding each other about, you know, all the time. God, I'm going to wipe the tears and then we're going to say our goodbyes to this season. Yeah. Wow. Thank you for that. Thank you for creating that song. I'm going to dance all summer. This song.
Thank you for creating this with me, Laura. This Coming Home podcast.
We've got so many adventures to come, and we can't wait to have all you, our listeners, to join us on those adventures.
Can't wait.
And as always, if you want to learn more about our guest and the subjects we touched upon today, please visit cominghomepodcast.com. Here you can also find the link to the inspiring and very useful app 29K. 29K supports you to take care of your mental health and grow together with others. When you want to learn new skills to deal with life, deepen relationships, or save the planet, they make evidence-based psychological tools scalable, lovable, and it's free.
We are so incredibly fortunate to have a great team helping us make coming home possible. The editing and sound mixing of this episode is made by Rahmatullah Sheikh. Our theme music is made by Caroline Jungstrom, and our website is designed by Seth and Erston Communication Bureau.
And a big thank you to Tweak Sweets, our lovely partner. They make candy that are filled with fibers and have 95% less sugar than regular candy, all with natural flavors and colors. So please go to their website, tweaksweets.com, and use the code COMINGHOME20 to get 20% off a whole purchase.
We truly appreciate all the feedback we get from you, and we simply, as we say, always cannot do this without you. This whole season, you've been with us, and if you want to be a part of building this community and letting more people into the conversation, be sure to rate, review, and follow the show on Spotify or Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen to your podcasts. And please recommend it to a friend who you think needs to hear something about self-compassion or all the other subjects that we've talked about during this first season of Coming Home.
Please do. Thank you for listening to this first season of Coming Home with me, Laura Buck.
And me, Sandra Andres.
And remember, be kind to your amazing self. Until next time.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.